From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond, California.
I live in Oakland, California. How you doing?
Coming up, we'll see how local cities will find money to pay for health benefits for retirees.
If a city truly intends on providing these benefits in future years, it really does make sense to put money towards them now.
Then we check in with San Francisco's efforts to house 50 homeless veterans in 100 days.
I gave Uncle Sam a blank check up to any amount of money up to my life and come back here and have to live like that.
And we'll meet some people who are taking the problems of homelessness into their own hands.
If the tape is not moved in a week, I know it's vacant.
What does a city owe its residents? We'll take that on today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. There's a way we think jobs are supposed to work. We get up every day, go to our workplaces, put in our hours, and cash our checks, saving a little each time. We repeat that routine for years, decades, our whole working lives. And at the end, when we can't work anymore, we look for that money we set aside. And that's just what thousands of former government employees are now doing. They spent years working for city governments and are now collectively owed billions of dollars in retiree health care benefits. But a new study by the nonprofit research group California Common Sense finds that many cities, including Oakland and San Francisco, haven't ever set aside money to pay these costs. The report suggests two unpalatable results: take the money from other city services or refuse to pay the benefits altogether. Earlier today, we spoke via Skype with the author of the report, Adam Tatum, about what local governments can do.
In our report, we look at the top 20 budgeted cities of California. 11 out of the 20 cities operate on what is called a pay-as-you-go strategy. And that is a strategy where they defer the payment for the retiree benefits until after an employee retires and while they claim them.
All these California cities, they have big budgets, but they're not setting aside funds for future health care costs. And why?
I think it's a few reasons. I think the biggest reason is up until now, these costs haven't been that significant. But as healthcare costs grow, as more people retire, these costs are growing rapidly and they're taking up greater portions of city budgets. And I think they're now starting to become an issue. For some cities, it's more of an issue than in others. But ultimately, in the next 5-10 years, we're going to start seeing these costs, you know, skyrocket. And I think cities are slowly recognizing the magnitude of these costs. I think another reason is maybe pre-funding does require that you pay more now in order to save for later. And maybe with the current economic climate, budgets are more strained, and maybe they are not willing to set aside extra money and cut other programs or anything like that.
So your report says that in San Francisco and in Oakland, there's this pay-as-you-go system. Can you explain to me what that is, how that works?
Let's consider a scenario where a new employee just started to work for a city. And as soon as he becomes eligible for benefits, the city will promise to pay for his health care after he retires. However, he has not retired yet, so the city will not be paying towards those benefits until years later. However, in the meantime, healthcare costs are rising, more people are retiring. So when that said employee ends up retiring, these costs will be very expensive. And if there are a lot of retired employees, the city will have to pay a lot at once. Pay-as-you-go will be waiting until later to pay for these. Pay is kind of what the name implies. As a retiree claims healthcare and they have, you know, healthcare premiums, the city will pay for them then rather than while the employee is still working. Pre-funding requires that the city pays for retiree healthcare while an employee is still working so that there will be money to pay for retiree healthcare in future years when the employee retires. But that isn't the whole story, though, because the extra money spent now can be invested into trust funds, and a city can use these additional investment earnings to pay for these benefits, rather than paying for everything out of their own pocket.
So one solution seems to be the pay-as-you-go, and another solution seems to be, you know, partial pre-funding. What other solutions are there to this, do you think?
It may require that they, if they can't afford the pre-fund, maybe they need to think a little bit more innovative. For example, in the city of Beverly Hills, they had a $58 million unfunded liability for these benefits. And what they did is they offered their active employees a one-time lump sum payment in exchange for these benefits. So rather than receiving retiree health care in future years, they could receive a lump sum. And it, surprisingly, 58% of incumbent employees agreed to this deal. And this reduced the unfunded liability by $13 million. So it may take innovative thinking, such as in Beverly Hills, if the city ultimately cannot afford to pre-fund.
And one line that you said really struck me. It said, you said, these benefits have already been promised to employees. To take them away will go back on that promise. It seems to me that many people, you know, kind of cherish that promise of being, you know, taken care of when they're in their golden years. Is that kind of the fundamental issue here, that promise and not being able to fulfill it?
Yeah, that is definitely one of the central arguments. If a city truly intends on providing these benefits in future years, it really does make sense to put money towards them now rather than later. If they cannot afford to provide these benefits, they will possibly be cut. And employees work their whole entire career believing that they're going to receive these benefits after they retire. And cities can face several court battles on whether or not that they can take them away or not. And it may be undetermined yet. It might take maybe multiple years for us to find out if cities are going to be cutting these benefits if they cannot afford them. But if one thing they can do now, though, is put aside assets that they truly intend on providing these benefits in future years.
That was Adam Tatum, research analyst with the nonprofit research group California Common Sense. Legislation addressing how governments deal with retiree health benefits will reach the state assembly later this month. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. California cities promised to pay those retirement benefits, so legally they have to do so. The same isn't true for housing city residents. Finding an apartment in San Francisco these days is an uphill battle on any kind of budget. Craigslist ads and open houses can provoke hundreds of responses from people ready to compete for their slice of the city's scarce square footage. For people without cash, things are a lot harder. Among those who find it most difficult are chronically homeless veterans.
Well, first of all, my goal is to have no homeless veterans.
In 2009, President Obama set a goal to end veteran homelessness by the year 2015. Since then, there's been a national push to improve existing programs, like one known as HUD-VOSH. HUD-VOSH is a collaborative effort between HUD and the VA, which provides case management and housing vouchers to chronically homeless veterans so they can find market-rate places to live. In May, several cities across the U.S. began a push to find housing for 50 veterans in 100 days. And in June, San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee hosted a press conference on the initiative. It was already 30 days in.
The thing that we can do is when these vouchers get into the hands of the lucky veterans that can get them, should we not honor that with the best effort to find housing, put a roof over, and have them individually have a lock and key for themselves in a great expensive place like San Francisco.
In the past 100 days, the city has housed just 12 veterans. It was a lot harder than anyone thought it would be. KALW's Mariel Wallof explains.
The maximum amount for a HUD-VASH voucher is $1,612 per month. But many veterans actually get a couple hundred dollars less than that. Finding a studio or one-bedroom apartment for $1,400 is possible in San Francisco, but it rules out a lot of neighborhoods. One-bedroom apartments in Nob Hill and the Mission District can list for upwards of $2,500 a month. The most affordable neighborhood is the Tenderloin, and many homeless vets would rather not live there. That's because many of them have already spent weeks, months, or even years on the neighborhood's streets.
My name is Nilo Arcia. I'm living at Salvation Army Harbor Lights Residential Treatment Program. I'm homeless.
Arcia is 49 years old. He grew up in the city's Bernal Heights neighborhood and enlisted as a teenager. After he left the service, he started abusing drugs and alcohol. He spent much of the past decade on the streets in the Tenderloin, using and selling drugs. But he's sober now, and he doesn't want to stay there.
I might just decide to go out there and, you know, step out of my apartment and whatever the case may be, and I'll start drinking. I don't want that. I want to stay clean and sober and productive life.
When I first meet Arcia in late June, he's been living at the drug treatment program for a year. He doesn't have his housing voucher yet, but he's already looking at apartments on Craigslist.
What I look for is the prices that they have. And it's like some of them are just out of town.
Clicking through ads, Arcia finds a broad range in prices, but they're all high. A Mission District studio asks for almost $2,000. A 500-square-foot apartment in Nob Hill lists for $2,600. I ask him if he even bothers looking at listings from the neighborhood he's trying to avoid.
Oh, I bother. For example, ooh, where is this at? That's pretty good. Eddie. Oh, okay, that's exactly where. That's exactly where I used to do my addiction, right in front of this apartment. And it's a nice, not, I guess it's a nice apartment, but the neighborhood itself is not for me.
There are about 170,000 homeless veterans in the U.S., close to a third of whom are chronically homeless. Leon Winston is the chief operating officer of Swords to Plowshares, a veterans organization partnering with the city in the 100 Days Initiative. He's a veteran and was once homeless himself. Many of these men have been poor for a long time. That's why Winston is concerned about them competing for apartments on the open market.
You were thinking bright, shiny new vets just coming home from Afghanistan or from Iraq a year or so ago, and that's not who they are. These are veterans who have been homeless a long time. They're typically in their 40s to 50s. They are unemployed for the most part, or if they are employed, it's part-time or underemployed generally. They're disabled. And they're competing, walking up to an open house with people driving up in BMWs for the same apartment.
We're going to 34th Avenue. And it's from my understanding, it's a pretty good neighborhood.
After several weeks of looking on Craigslist, Nilo Arcia finds a few studio and one bedrooms in the Sunset and Outer Richmond neighborhoods, close to his job at the VA Medical Center. I meet up with him on a Saturday in early July to visit an open house.
Half a block away is a park, golf course, American Legion of Honor.
He's wearing jeans and a baggy long-sleeved shirt and carries a backpack full of forms. The first apartment we're visiting is on a quiet street near Lincoln Park. He's excited and a little nervous. He smokes a few cigarettes. This is the first apartment he's gone to see in at least 10 years.
I have the voucher in my hand, in my possession. And I have a little piece of paper that me and the landlord could go over, and so the housing authority will inspect it.
We reach the building and walk upstairs to a big, sunny studio apartment. It's listed at $1,295, a good deal. One other man is filling out an application. Arcia introduces himself to the guy showing the apartment and explains that he's a veteran. The man says he is, too.
Interested in this one is because I don't. It's only 5 minutes to 4 miles where I work at.
Great. Well, you're very welcome to apply for this one if you wish.
Okay.
We're going to be deciding on Monday who gets the unit. Okay. And I had quite a crowd here today too. I think I got 6 applications, but I'll take yours if you want.
Okay.
Now there are
then Arcia begins explaining about his voucher, and things get complicated. The man has never heard of the program, and as it turns out, he isn't actually the landlord. Arcia also explains that the apartment would need to be inspected by someone from the Department of Housing. That's one of the HUDVASH requirements.
That's a lot of work. I don't know if the landlord's going to want to wait. See, because I've got six applications right now of people that wanted a yes call from me on Monday. I don't think the owner will wait.
In San Francisco, these housing inspections used to take weeks to complete. The 100 Days program has shortened the process to just 48 hours. But for Arcia, it's still too long. So we check out the bathroom, look at the shiny wood floors, and leave.
Thank you. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks.
How do you feel?
Well, discouraged, but it's not going to stop me. I'm going to keep looking until I found my own place that fits my lifestyle. Nice piece, close to work, and be good to society.
Part of Arcia's problem is that landlords don't have any legal obligation to rent to veterans. The city can encourage them, but that's about it. That's part of what Bevan Dufty is trying to change.
I'm Bevan Dufty. I'm Director of HOPE, Housing Opportunity, Partnerships and Engagement. We're part of Mayor Lee's office. One of the things that was a wake-up call for me was Mayor Lee had a press conference. It was very well attended. It was on all the television news stations. It was in the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle. And after all of that media coverage, after the first week of the campaign, only six landlords had come forward and said that they were interested in having units inspected. And that was a bit troubling.
One idea Dufty has is to change policy and allow voucher recipients to share an apartment or rent an SRO, which voucher rules currently don't allow. Another is to give veterans the option of leaving San Francisco altogether. That's ultimately what happened to Stephen Hancock, a 65-year-old combat veteran and San Diego native.
I must have looked at 200 or 300 places, all up by the VA, all in the avenues, South San Francisco, downtown San Francisco, and you couldn't stay no place near downtown San Francisco because the vouchers wasn't even enough for you to even look at a place.
Hancock abandoned the listings and began driving around in his truck, looking for places to live. Eventually, he stumbled upon an apartment building for seniors in San Bruno. The management there told him they'd love to have him, and other veterans. But when he told his counselor what he found, he learned that his voucher was only good within San Francisco city limits. Hancock stood his ground. He was determined to live in a more peaceful environment than he'd find in the Tenderloin.
I gave Uncle Sam a blank check up to any amount of money up to my life. I've seen a lot of my brothers give their life, you know what I'm saying, and come back here and have to live like that.
Eventually, he was able to exchange his San Francisco voucher for one in San Mateo County. He moved into the San Bruno building in March.
Now we're getting ready to enter my little abode. This is my kitchen. As soon as you come in, you're stepping into my kitchen. It's small, but it's mine. New refrigerator, new microwave, dishwasher, and all the little things that I need. I can call this my home. Now you're stepping into my little bitty dining room and living room, but it's space enough for me, more than enough space for me.
Even though Hancock had to leave San Francisco to find what he was looking for, he's ended his 23-year bout of homelessness. There's one less veteran living on the streets now. But many more are still homeless or in limbo. As of early August, Nilo Arcia said he'd been turned down for 5 more apartments because the landlords didn't want to accept his voucher. But he does think he's found a place to live, a studio apartment in the Tenderloin. In San Francisco, I'm Marielle Walla for Cross Currents.
A 76-studio apartment building called Veterans Commons is set to open this fall at 150 Otis Street in San Francisco. So what do you think of the city's efforts to house veterans? Leave us a message on our feedback line at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106.
Coming up, we meet some people who are taking a very different approach to housing the homeless. Stay with us. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. It's just after midnight in San Francisco's Hayes Valley, and two men are smoking cigarettes outside the gate of an abandoned school. They're waiting for the right moment to break in.
But the main reason we're here tonight is because three people came to the meeting tonight who all were in essentially immediate need of housing, and this was a spot that could conceivably house a lot of people, 20 people comfortably. It has water and electricity, and it's truly abandoned.
When the taxis and pedestrians pass, Matt Crane slips two slender pieces of metal into a padlock and begins to maneuver them. Crane's lookout warns him when people come near. Red light, he says, and the pair light new cigarettes. Finally, the padlock opens. Now Crane can venture onto the school's property. The next step is to see if people can live inside it.
Humans, we're animals, and we're gonna do what we need to do to survive. Our survival instinct is powerful. If a human being is cold, they're gonna do what they need to do to get warm.
Crane is a member of a group called Homes Not Jails, a 20-year-old collective dedicated to opening squats. It's a loose association of a few dozen activists, anarchists, and otherwise homeless people united behind a cause. 2 to 4 nights a week for the last couple of years, Crane has gone to neighborhoods around San Francisco, locating and opening vacant buildings for squatters to live in, though the abandoned school he's checking out right now won't be one of them. Squatting is a form of trespassing, and the group's activities also involve vandalism, such as picking locks and forcing open doors. These are misdemeanors and potentially felonies, and that's why we're using first names only for most of the people in this upcoming story. They're willing to risk jail to give shelter to people in need. It's illegal. It's a violation of the right to property. But is it wrong? Reporter Charlie Mintz from the Stanford Storytelling Project investigates in this story from our archives.
It's a Tuesday night, and Homes Not Jails member Bruce Allison is leading me down a quiet block in the Mission. He's showing me how to turn a vacant building into a squat.
At the end of Shackwell, this on the Shackwell side right here by Food Co.
Could you say where we're going?
No.
Allison lives in an SRO in the Tenderloin. He spends a lot of time writing for Poor Magazine and getting in the city's hair about tenants' rights and affordable housing issues. He's also pretty good at spotting vacant buildings.
Looks abandoned. Looks like somebody hadn't been in there for a while. The whole thing looks like enough graffiti on it. Hadn't been cleaned. And other signs I'm not going to give away at this time.
There are more official ways of finding vacant buildings. The city keeps track of foreclosed homes, and real estate websites list properties for rent and for sale. The Department of Building Inspection also keeps a list of abandoned properties that's kind of tough to get your hands on, but can be acquired. I've seen it. But the best way is just to be out on the street, noticing. Allison has a simple technique for making sure a property is vacant. He sticks a strip of duct tape across a closed gate or door.
The tape I put on, I can look at it tomorrow. It's this round corner here. And if the tape is not moved in a week, I know it's vacant.
So what's next?
Then I can find a way to get access in there. Go inside.
How do you think you'll do that?
I can't tell you at this time.
Over time, I learn them. The simplest and least destructive involves just going up through a window. But Homes Not Jails might also pick a lock or pry a door open with a crowbar. Probably the most aggressive technique involves stealing the keys and lockboxes at for sale and for rent homes. They clip off the box with bolt cutters and then smash it open with a sledgehammer. Then they go to a meeting to talk about their progress.
Yeah. Tonight, as I was coming here, I happened to be walking by it, and the tape on the smaller of the two gates was still there intact, but the larger gate around the corner
to the main, essentially what looks like the main door,
yeah,
that tape was completely split. It was obvious somebody had breached that
door.
Homes Not Jails meetings are hosted at the office of the San Francisco Housing Rights Committee, which is sympathetic but not officially affiliated. Meetings start with a roll call. Tonight's seven attendees say their name, their housing status, and if they're willing to go on an away team, which is code for late-night squat exploring.
I'm Matt.
Matt Crane.
I'm in need of housing because I only have one squat.
The average squat only lasts about a month, so Homes Not Jails constantly needs to be finding new ones. They're good at it, though. This year alone, Crane estimates they've moved nearly 100 people into about 50 vacant homes. Anyone who shows up at the meeting can be placed in an available squat. Those housed include people forced into homelessness and people who are homeless voluntarily, you might say.
I'm homeless by choice, in a sense. I mean, I'm housed, but I'm housed because I've taken the effort to open up a vacant or abandoned place and use it. I just personally can't support a system that I don't believe in.
Crane stays in an abandoned condo he shares with other squatters. They've been there about 5 months. Cops will respond to any complaint about trespassing. But if the squatters can make a convincing argument they belong there, with mail in their name, say, or permanent-looking furniture, then the landlord has to go to court to get them out. For people like Crane, squatting is a way to resist a system they can't abide. But for landlords and property managers, it's an expensive annoyance.
My name is Robert Link. I am the owner of SNL Realty.
Link, like the other realtors and property managers I spoke with, says vacancies in San Francisco are so low that he doesn't need to deal with squatting too much. But if Crane and his crew staked out his apartment, cut his lockbox to get his keys, and stayed without permission?
First, to file a police report, the first thing I would feel is violated. I would feel that this is first an illegal taking, this is a trespassing. Second call would probably be to my attorney to start that, whatever process it would be to get that, those, you know, get those people out.
Any sympathy?
No, honestly, to be fairly honest, I mean, there may be some sympathy for the fact that there may be people having some hardships in life, but I think that there are alternatives than illegal taking. There are shelters.
Shelters aren't a great option, though. There are only 1,176 shelter beds for 6,455 homeless people, according to the Coalition on Homelessness, a national advocacy organization. But squatting is no cure-all, either. It's hard to do, and even for those who are sympathetic, it's sometimes hard to defend. About a week after the HNJ meeting, I'm with Crane and another member named Gina on an away team. They're going to a neighborhood in the Excelsior to check out some potentially vacant homes. During the drive, Gina confesses that she's not really sure how to justify taking other people's property.
What is there to protect, you know, somebody from walking into my home and saying, well, you have a free dining room, let me live in it?
That is the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my life.
I'm just saying that I have gotten that.
And I would say whoever makes that argument is being absolutely absurd and silly.
That is a common concern I've got. But what is it to stop somebody from taking my spare room or squatting in my car or my backyard or my office?
And I would say you're going to stop them. Because what would you do if somebody came in and squatted your dining room?
What would you do if somebody came and squatted your dining room?
I'd say welcome home. But
okay.
Just because Crane lacks a coherent philosophy doesn't mean he's wrong. He knows what he sees. People without homes and homes without people. And for him, that's justification enough to take over empty buildings.
I feel very comfortable admitting that I am not a very good political theorist, and I'm an even worse spokesman for any kind of political theory. And I'm okay with that. I know what feels right for me. And it feels right for me to take a piece of property that's being neglected, that's being underutilized, and turn it into a home. We've just come inside what was a single-family home, but it's been converted to a duplex. It's a place that we were at last week, and we're able to come in and
secure the front door, replace the lock.
We step onto plush carpet in an unfurnished room. In the kitchen, motion detector lights go on when we pass through. The electricity and water work.
It has hot water as well, so the gas is still on.
Crane guesses it's a stalled renovation keeping this home empty. There are no tools in sight, but the downstairs has a nearly finished linoleum floor. And outside each room, there's a little card with a dollar amount written on it.
As indicating the person's idea of how much rent the unit is worth. It was somebody's concept that this little garage, dank little unit was worth $450 to somebody. And they probably would get $450 for it in the city today.
Crane doesn't like people to profit off housing. With this place, at least, he can do something about it. He deems the building squattable in an emergency, but he'll have to investigate to see if it'll work as more permanent housing. The rest of the houses he's taped up have been breached. The duct tape's broken. So he and Gina decide to check out a new neighborhood.
What are you looking for now as you're kind of going on?
Anything from no curtains and obviously a vacant space, a vacant room. Doors or windows that have been previously broken. Old lockboxes. Lockboxes that have been hanging for a long time. Nobody's been by.
I like the way people look for water in the desert, just sort of like intuition.
Yeah, yeah, there's certainly some of that. If it's a quiet night, you might be able to hear a smoke detector that's battery has run down to the point where it's beeping to let you know that it needs to be replaced. So
it's hard to know just how many squattable places there are in San Francisco. According to the 2010 U.S. Census, there were 31,131 vacant housing units. Most are for rent, or they're vacation homes. But 8,000 are abandoned for other reasons the census doesn't specify. The people with homes not jails say they belong to speculators, who buy homes and keep them off the market until prices go up. Realtors I spoke with disagreed.
Like, I don't know if you heard that, but we actually just heard a smoke detector battery beep.
Crane freezes and puts his head up. He waits a half minute or so until he hears the beep again. Somebody needs to replace the smoke detector's battery. The beep could mean no one's around to do it. He and Gina cross the street in the direction of the sound, then they wait again. The beep comes like a tiny heartbeat from inside the house. It's shelter, maybe.
Water in the desert, I don't know. It could just be a mirage, or sometimes, you know, when you're homeless and you're looking for a place, it most certainly can feel like water in a desert. It's exactly what it feels like to want a little bit of security and peace and want to be inside and be able to close a door behind you and know that you're safe and you have a little bit of your own space. I would equate that to the desire to quench your thirst, as natural as drinking water.
Squatting is no solution to homelessness. It's too impractical, too difficult, too temporary. It can also cost property owners aggravation, time, and money. But as long as there are homes without people and people without homes, there will be squatters. Outside a potentially vacant building, I'm Charlie Mintz for Cross Currents.
That piece originally aired September 15th, 2011. How do you feel about breaking into abandoned buildings? Join the discussion on our Facebook page. We're KALW News. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Zoe Bresny, Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Lupe Hernandez, Chris Hoff, RTM's Konahovs, Nina Nicole Morente, Erica Mu, Mary Reese, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll learn about a program trying to give teens a leg up in the workforce.
Very sadly, for many of our young adults, their potential can often be limited by their zip code or by the bank balance of one of their parents, or indeed by the color of their skin.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. This is the sound of the Oakland band Felsen. These transmitters of lo-fi pop have opened for bands like the Stone Foxes and Marcy Playground, and they have 3 songs on the Rock Band video game. And they're playing tomorrow night at the 50 Mason Social House as part of the SF Underground Music Fest. The lights go down at about 8 p.m. And a reminder, be sure to stay for the guy in the white bunny suit. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.